You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Hello and welcome to Aryan Britannia. Today's date is Monday the 4th of February 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioaryan.com. Well, normally we would have Max Musson here from Western Spring, but he's unable to make it today. So you're just going to have a monologue from me, which we're going to break up halfway through with a bit of music, as we usually do when it's just myself here for you. And in Aryan Britannia, we concentrate on what's happening in Britain, the news that's happening in Britain over the last week. And the first news story that I've got today is quite a famous one. When this first happened, a lot of people were really shocked by it. And it concerns a Negro that it looked like he was trying to kill somebody else that was in a car. He had a huge zombie knife that he was smashing against the window. He obviously had murder in mind. The video was released. Everybody was really shocked by it. And the thing is, if there's a video that's been taken of this happening, you can make a safe bet that there are at least 100 other times that it's happened and nobody's actually been there with a camera to record it. So this has to be something that quite often happens. And we do read about a lot of these things happening. Just today, I read about a machete attack in a McDonald's. I believe three people crashed into a McDonald's with machetes and attacked another group that were in there, right in front of the elderly people and children. And this attack happened in the middle of the road. You know, the cars were all stopped and there was this young Negro trying to kill somebody, basically. And he was let off. He was let off, and there was an outcry over this. But we should have known he was going to be let off because he was 17 years old, and the judges have been told that if they have young Negroes in the dock, they have to bear in mind that they may have been the victims of racism in the past, and therefore the sentence has to be reduced. We've also got a big drive at the moment to reduce the amount of blacks that we have in prisons, because there are four times as many blacks in prisons and I think 15 times as many blacks in young offenders institutions as there should be for their percentage of the population. Instead of realising the blacks are more likely to commit crime, our government has decided that it must be because there's endemic racism in the system. Therefore, to rectify that, the judges have been told to go easy on the blacks and try not to imprison as many of them. And of course, this is what happens when you do that. You get somebody that is obviously trying to murder someone and he just gets let off with a suspended sentence. Well, thankfully, that's now been overturned. Court of Appeal judges have overturned a 2-year suspended sentence on a London teen who attacked a car with a large zombie knife in broad daylight, ordering he be imprisoned for 3.5 years. That's still not a very long sentence, is it? 3.5 years. He'll be out in 1.5 years, and he was obviously trying to kill somebody here, and they want to deter knife crime. How does this deter knife crime? I don't think it does deter knife crime. It's a paltry sentence. It's not as bad as a suspended sentence, but it's still nothing for trying to kill somebody with a knife in front of all the people that were in the cars there. Think of all the people that were shocked to see this. The people that had young children in their cars as passengers. This isn't justice. There was a public outcry after Joshua Gardner was given the suspended sentence for committing the attack in May 2018 in Croydon, South London, when he was 17 years old. His original sentence was branded ridiculous by some commentators, with police officers taking to social media to voice their concern that the case would not act as a deterrent. And this is one of the sad things about this, is that police do a very, very dangerous job. And they try to catch these criminals, and then they get put before the courts, and then they just see them being let off. I mean, it must be very depressing and disheartening for them. And to see all the resources that go into going after people that criticize immigration and criticize the race war that's happening on our streets. And the authorities seem to think that that's far more important to have a success rate with that than actually going after real criminals. The success rate is about 5% of going after crime. And yet the police force, or the top of the police force, will proudly tell us that every single one of the alleged hate crimes will be investigated. And yet only 5% of real crimes that physically hurt people actually get solved. At the time of the original sentencing, in November 2018, Judge Anuja Dia, QC, so a foreign judge as well, not a white judge, handed down the original sentence based on the defendant having reduced culpability after the court had heard Gardner had been kidnapped weeks prior. The judge also taking into account the youth's difficult upbringing. Now, this report actually comes from Breitbart, and that's the only one that I've seen that mentioned that it the youth's difficult upbringing was taken into account, and that is a euphemism for he suffered from racism. Other newspapers have concentrated on the fact that he'd been kidnapped in the weeks prior to this, and his story was that he was forced to sell drugs, so he wanted to kill the person that had forced him to sell drugs. I mean, it really doesn't sound very believable. I don't think that's the reason why the sentence was reduced. The sentence was reduced because of the youth's difficult upbringing. Now, if you look online, it's quite hard to actually find this directive about reducing the sentences for racism. I did manage to find one report on it, and this is from the BBC. Judges should consider whether a young criminal has suffered discrimination as an ethnic minority before deciding their sentence under a new guideline. So it's young people there, and it's ethnic minorities there. That get their sentences reduced. The Sentencing Council for England and Wales says offending may be partly a product of discrimination and, quote, negative experiences of authority. It is the first guideline to stress discrimination as a youth crime factor. So they're saying racism is the reason why young blacks carry out crime. It's because they've been discriminated against by whites. And it's actually whites that are being discriminated against here. White criminals don't get any help if they've suffered discrimination or have had negative experiences of authority. It's only blacks that do. It stresses that sentencing judges and magistrates should take into account underlying factors, including the overrepresentation of black and minority ethnic children in the justice system. So again, it's saying we've got too many blacks in prison. Judges must take that into account and stop jailing criminals when they're black. I mean, it's there in black and white. Judges and magistrates should take into account underlying factors, including the overrepresentation of black and minority ethnic children in the justice system. The factors contributing to this are complex, it says. One factor is that a significant proportion of looked after children and young people are from a black and minority ethnic background. A further factor may be the experience of such children and young people in terms of discrimination and negative experiences of authority. And that's exactly what this black knifeman supposedly had. That's why the judge says he takes it into account, the youth's difficult upbringing. So we're all angry at the judge for doing this, but the judge is just carrying out the instructions that he's been given. Blacks are supposed to be given less of a sentence if they're young, and white people are to blame for them carrying out their crimes. That's what this is saying, and this is what happens when you do that. somebody that quite obviously wanted to murder another human being gets let off with a suspended sentence. You can make a safe bet that if it was a white man that was doing that, he'd be facing 10 years. He wouldn't have any chance of being let off because he may have had negative experiences when he was a child. And what do they mean by discrimination? How can they say that blacks are being discriminated against when we've got policies like this one, which is discriminating against whites? It's ensuring that blacks get less of a punishment. It's like the drive that they've got on in the British Transport Police at the moment. They've got a big drive to encourage black and minority ethnics to sign up for the transport police. So they've got a workshop, which is obviously going to give people that go to the workshop an advantage over everybody else in joining the police. And it says black and minority ethnics only. Black and minority ethnics and women, rather, only can go to this workshop. So it's not blacks that are being discriminated against. It's whites that are being discriminated against. We see the same thing at the BBC. Black and minority ethnics and females only need apply for this job. If you look at the universities, they are reducing the qualifications required to join the university if you're black or if you're female. So how is it that young blacks have had negative experiences of authority and have been discriminated against? They're not being discriminated against. They're being raised up on a pedestal. They are being treated as if they are a higher life form, as if they're worth a lot more than the rest of society. The rest of society has to get by on merit, and blacks can get by just on complaining that they were discriminated against when obviously there is no institutional discrimination. The institutional discrimination is against white people. The court heard that the teenager was held for 10 days in March last year after being bundled into a car and threatened with a gun because of a friend's drug debt. Gardner, then 17, was forced to work in a trap house and sell drugs by the gang. He launched his attack 2 months later during afternoon rush hour on the 30th of May. As I've said, that really doesn't sound like a very believable story, that he was forced to just sit there in a trap house selling drugs. I mean, the guy would have been paid for this. You wouldn't trust somebody with all these drugs and just leave them alone in a house with money and drugs. The temptation would be for them to run if they'd been kidnapped. This story really doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And they're actually, I saw Sajid Javid today, the Home Secretary, Britain's Home Secretary, and he was blaming the rise in violent crime, the huge rise in violent crime and stabbings. He was blaming that on a worldwide increase in drug purity. Drug purity. It's not drug purity that's causing this. It's the ethnicity of the people that are doing it. That's the one factor that links them all together. The rise in violent crime. All this violent crime is happening in the multicultural centres of Britain. It's happening in places like London, happening in Birmingham, happening in Manchester. It doesn't happen in Cornwall. It doesn't happen in rural areas of Scotland. It doesn't happen in the villages of Wales. It happens in the multicultural centres. And we can see that the majority of the people that are involved in it are black, because they're four times more likely to be in prison than whites are. And black youngsters are even more likely to be locked up. 15, 16 times as many black youngsters are in young offender institutions than their percentage of the population. That's the cause of this. It's the increase in immigration. It's not an increase in drug purity. That's just ridiculous. If there's an increase in drug purity, people just need to buy less. If the drug purity goes down, people have to buy more. So in actual fact, there should be less crime because the drug prices have come down. If the drug prices have come down, that means that less money is needed to buy the drugs, which means less robberies take place, less burglaries take place. The idea that a worldwide increase in the purity of drugs is responsible for an increase in violence is just nonsense. And we wouldn't have these drugs in our country anyway if it wasn't for the blacks and the Pakistanis bringing them in. The majority of the heroin is run by the Pakistanis. They're the ones with all the links. And if you go to any of the British airports, you will see that there are far more Pakistanis and blacks that are actually working at the airport than there are their percentage in the population. That's how these drugs get through. They get through through the cousin that works at the airport, in security. The airports and the transport industry are very proud of all the non-whites that they've got working for them, and that's where these drugs come in. Continuing here with convicted knife man. I guess he was convicted of intent of manslaughter. I guess I don't think it actually says what he was convicted of. He pulled up on his bicycle alongside a car with a 19-year-old man inside while it was sat in stationary traffic in Croydon. The car tried to pull away but almost hit Gardner's bike and crashed. Gardner started kicking the vehicle and hitting the windows with his knife while trying to open the doors. He eventually managed to smash the passenger window and attempted to stab the victim through the hole before the man got out and fled. I mean, this is obvious attempted murder. This is attempted murder. There isn't any extenuating circumstances that the guy was selling drugs a couple of weeks before he was forced to sell drugs. This is the sort of person that thinks nothing of trying to murder somebody in broad daylight, and he's going to be back out on the streets of London in a year and a half, probably less. The incident was witnessed by passers-by, including parents who had collected their children from school. So they're saying that this happened in Russia. This happened while all the mothers were walking along with their prams and all the young kids, and this is what they see. A normal child would be very traumatized by that. I dare say if you live in London, this is the sort of thing that you see happening every day now. It's the sort of thing you see happening all the time in Africa. I mean, this is the equivalent of tribal warfare, gang warfare, and killing people because they've slightly insulted you or said some words that have hurt your feelings. Going out and killing them because they've dishonored you, that is the sort of behaviour you expect to see in Africa, the sort of behaviour you expect to see in primitive societies. Now we see it in London, the capital city of Britain, that's now 60% non-white. That's the reason why these crimes are happening. Gardner's outburst of violence was caught on dashcam footage of a vehicle that was travelling in the opposite direction. The footage was circulated widely on social media amidst heightened public concern over record levels of knife crime, and Gardner was recognised and arrested by police. Well, it's a shame more people aren't pointing out that the reason why he was given such a lenient sentence in the first place is simply because he was black. Simply because he was black, and they want to have less blacks in prison. And the judges have been told that the reason these blacks are committing these crimes is because they've been the victims of discrimination. And anybody with any common sense can see the holes in that explanation and why policies like that are so dangerous to the rest of us. The next story that I've got for us today also concerns a sickening crime that you would never have expected to be going on in the streets of Britain. But it goes on today because of the diversity that we're all forced to live alongside. A burglar who had sex with a corpse after breaking into a funeral parlour has been jailed for 6 years. Now that is inaccurate. You cannot have sex with a corpse. A corpse can only be raped. How can a corpse give consent? Sex is when you have consent. Rape is when there is no consent. This is rape. A burglar raped a corpse after breaking into a funeral parlour. You think of the relatives of the dead person, how they feel about this. And the guy was just given 6 years. Again, he'll be out within 3 years. Kasim Kuram, 23, had sex with a woman's body after lifting the lids of coffins at the Central England Cooperative Undertakers in Walsall Road, Great Bar, Birmingham, on the 11th of November. And we're told that these Muslims have great respect, and they have to have the bodies of the dead, they have to be disposed of in a proper way, and the Jews say that you cannot possibly ever disturb the body of a Jew, that's why no digging can be done where they claim the 6 million were buried in Germany and Poland. Nobody can dig in the supposed burial grounds because it would be disturbing the bodies, and these religious Jews cannot possibly allow that to happen. And it's the same with the Muslims. And yet here we have a Muslim raping dead bodies after lifting all the lids on the coffins. Karam actually disturbed 9 coffins during a drug-induced psychosis, it says here. Well, drugs just bring out what is already there. You cannot say that drugs make people rape the dead. This is the first time that something like this has happened. I dare say it happens a lot more in places like Pakistan and India. In India, you've got people that live among the dead. You've got people that live in the graveyards, and they will eat human flesh. There's a sect over there. They're called Aghoris, I believe, that do such things. And here we have the same thing now happening over here, where we have a Muslim. I think may actually be Palestinian. He's either Palestinian or he's Pakistani. And I dare say it was probably a white corpse that he was doing this to. It doesn't say that it was a Muslim funeral parlour. Sentencing at Birmingham Crown Court. Judge Melbourne Inman QC said the crimes offend all human sensitivity. I am not aware of, and nor have I been able to find, any similar case. It would be difficult to think of a greater deprivation of the dignity of the dead, he said. Karam of Kenilworth Road, Aston, forced his way into the parlour at about 3 a.m. GMT while high on Mamba and PCP and after drinking vodka. Well, why was he high on Mamba and PCP and drinking vodka? Well, he was doing that because that's the sort of thing that is encouraged in our society today. Our society likes to encourage drug taking, it likes to encourage drinking, it likes to encourage hedonism, it likes to say that normal sex between a man and a woman, that's no different to abnormal sex such as anal sex, sodomy, buggery, men with animals. And if you have a society that accepts that and says that that's normal, well, what's the difference between having sex with the dead? The corpse, obviously, it's not going to upset the corpse. Logically, it's perfectly fine. If you're going to say that it's perfectly fine to have anal sex, sodomy, then what's the difference between putting it in a corpse? If you're going to be putting it in a sewer pipe, what's the difference between putting it in a corpse? Maybe I'm using inflammatory language here. Obviously, homosexuals would rather not be linked to necrophiliacs. But when you think about the mechanics of this, it's basically putting your member somewhere that it shouldn't be. And our society seems to think a lot of perversity, seems to think that it's not perversity, and it's on an equal footing with heterosexual norms, then what's the difference? The only difference is ancient traditional morals, and they're not supposed to be of any use to us anymore. I've just been reading Dr. E. Michael Jones' book, Libido Dominandi, which explains how all of this happened, how we got rid of all our morals and our traditions, how we broke down marriage, broke down the family, divorced sex from the procreative aspect to it, and said that it was just all about pleasure, all about pleasure, and so long as it's two people that are consenting, that's absolutely fine. It doesn't matter what kind of sex it is, and what you have here is somebody that is not even going to be affected by it. The corpse is not even going to be affected. The person is no longer there, no longer inhabiting that body, so they can't be upset. Logically, by the degenerate standards that we have in the modern age, this shouldn't even be a crime. I dare say, maybe thoughts like that were going through this person's head while he was committing this foul deed. Either that, or he was maybe not even aware of what he was doing if he was taking all these drugs and drinking. He disturbed multiple coffins and desecrated the bodies of two women. He was arrested at the scene by police officers alerted by the parlour's alarm. The court heard he was sectioned for 2 weeks after being interviewed by police as he was showing signs of drug-induced psychosis. Detective in Chief Inspector John Askew from West Midlands Police described it as an horrendous and disturbing act. Curran wept as victim impact statements were read out in court, and his defence barrister Joseph Keating said he was deeply sorry for his actions. I bet he is. His picture is all over the newspapers as being a corpse raper. The victim's families described him as a monster who had twisted a knife into their hearts. Curran, who previously admitted sexual penetration of a body and burglary, was also ordered to register as a child offender for 10 years. You see, this was also a burglary. And he was obviously mentally capable enough to think, well, if I break into this funeral parlour, I will be able to steal something. And then while he was in there, he just thought, well, I'll just take advantage of these corpses here and have myself a bit of fun, I guess, is what he was thinking. And this reminds me of the Mestizo over in America that raped a comatose patient, a patient that had been on life support since the age of 3 years old, totally incapable of doing or saying anything. And the nurse that was supposed to be looking after this woman actually raped the woman. And none of the rest of the care home hospital knew this had been going on until the woman suddenly gave birth. And then they DNA tested the people there, and surprise, surprise, this very, very dodgy looking mestizo character matched the DNA. And if you look at this character, you will see that he looks dodgy. He looks dodgy. Why is it that we refuse to go along with our instincts? We look at people and our instincts say, they are not nice people. You don't want to know that person. And then because we've been conditioned, we say, oh, no, that's racism, that is. That's racism to stereotype people, to say that people that look like that are likely to be trouble. And then we bend over backwards to be nice to them. And then they stab us in the back. I bet just about all the listeners here now have had negative experiences with non-whites. And I bet they just said to themselves, well, that just must be... It just must be a bad apple in the bunch. It can't be all of them that are like this. That would be racist to be thinking that. I know I used to think that. I know I've had lots of negative experiences with non-whites. And I never put it together. And put it together that they are far more likely to be behaving like that than whites do. We ignore our common sense, we ignore our instincts, and we ignore our intuition. And that's because there's been a massive program of propaganda to counteract it. And we're going to get into a little bit more about what these criminals look like in the next news story, which will be in part two. We're going to have a little bit of a music break now, and we're going to go back in time to just at the time when the Berlin Wall had fallen for a track by Warlord that's called Soldier of Fortune, and I'll be back in a few minutes with part two. Just been listening to Warlord and Soldier of Fortune, and if that sounded familiar to you, that's because it was based around the track 99 Red Balloons that was also released at the same time of the Berlin Wall falling. Okay, let's get into the next news story. As I said, again, it concerns criminals that look like criminals. Remember that during the era of the Third Reich, they did a lot of research into this and discovered that people that had a certain look, they were more likely to carry out crime. And I do believe we still have our instincts there, and our instincts tell us if somebody is dodgy. And this is why so much has been put into the propaganda to tell us that blacks are the same as whites. The instinct that you have when you first see somebody black is to avoid them. That is your first instinct. That is the instinct that children have. That's the instinct that dogs have. You could say, well, that's just it's just evolution. It's just evolutionary behavior, because Obviously, nature wants to keep the nations apart. God wants to keep the nations apart. They don't want inbreeding. We have specific kinds on this earth. We have specific kinds of human. And if we find the other kinds of human attractive, that will cause the extinction of all the different kinds of human. Polar bears don't find black bears attractive. Polar bears don't find grizzly bears attractive. Blue whales don't find humpback whales attractive. We don't find blacks attractive, whether that is because they are ugly or whether that is just because ugliness is dependent on whether you're a part of that race or not. We don't know whether it's objective or not. We don't know. But the natural instinct is to avoid them. The natural instinct is to find friends and partners that share a large amount of hereditary genes with yourself. And obviously the other races don't share any hereditary genes with us, or at most a small amount, because obviously most of these other races are mixed races. And indeed, the criminals involved in this, you can see that they're a jumbled up mystery meat type. You can see there's a bit of Negro in there, a bit of Pakistani in there, a bit of this, that, and the other, and they just look dodgy as hell. Not the sort of people you would want anything to do with. Five members of a ruthless teenage gang who went on a violent carjacking spree across Birmingham have been locked up. The young men carried out a series of exceptionally violent and ruthless carjacking robberies over 5 days between August 15th to 19th, 2017. They were clearly pre-planned and targeted predominantly women, James Curtis, QC, prosecuting, told Birmingham Crown Court. The spree culminated in one of the gang carrying out a shocking revenge shooting inside a chippy. He fired a revolver into the busy fish and chip shop, narrowly missing customers and a young boy. Again, this is in front of children, families. There was a time when crimes would happen late at night, and if it was gangs, it would be gangs on gangs, and it would be happening in an area that the gangs would hang out. Now these crimes are happening during the day. They're happening in broad daylight. They're happening on our streets. They're happening on the school bus. They're happening while the kids and the mothers are out on their school run. And things are just going to get worse. The more we ignore the warning signs, the greater the hazards become. The more we refuse to separate our races from one another, the worse the crime is going to get. That's just the way that nature operates. It's the way that the universe operates. If we're going down the wrong path, the universe tries to tell us. So obviously, nature doesn't want us to go extinct, so nature makes it so that life is increasingly uncomfortable if we live alongside these other races. It's just nature. It's nature in action when we see crimes like this happening in our cities. And we should be waking up to the fact and what the cause of this is, and separating our people from them. In another shocking attack, one victim, a businessman, was left badly injured as a result of the horrific attack, and someone who tried to intervene was mowed down and suffered a broken leg. And I'd lay a bet that the person that tried to intervene was probably white. The Muslim gang of two Khans, two Mohammeds, and an Imran were sentenced to a total of almost 60 years between them in a young offenders institution. Now, these names, they just keep turning up, don't they? Every time you read about the convicted criminals, they always seem to be a Khan or a Muhammad or an Imran or perhaps an Abdul. You would think the fact that the same name crops up all the time, that might tip a few people off as to who it is that's responsible for this crime wave that we are all suffering. And it's almost as if it's just the same person that's carrying this out. It's like when the terrorism occurs and when people blow themselves up. I mean, they keep saying who it is that instructed them to do this. They keep telling us that Allah's the one that told them to do this. And what does our government say? Islam is a religion of peace, and Islam has nothing to do with this. In actual fact, we've even got Peter Hitchens this week telling us that it's cannabis that's responsible for Muslim terrorists. No mention of Islam, but apparently it's cannabis that causes them to do this. Everybody will make any suggestion under the sun as to what is the cause of these crimes, but the actual real cause of the crimes, which is that non-whites are more predisposed to carrying out crimes than whites are. And all you have to do is look at their own countries to see that, and look at their behaviour in our countries to see that. The statistics are all there. And what do we say? Oh, these statistics, they show that it must be white racism that's locking all these poor, innocent non-whites and blacks up. What are they saying? That they're innocent? The blacks and the non-whites are innocent of these crimes? White people are just making up false accusations against them? White people aren't making up false accusations. White people are bending over backwards to try not to lock blacks and non-whites up. There's probably far more crimes being committed by them than the actual records show. The attacks were mainly in the southeast area of Birmingham, with Atif and Mohammed Imran involved in the first one on August the 15th. A 61-year-old woman, so almost a pensioner, had just driven her Ford Focus into the driveway of a home in Kits Green when the defendants dragged her out of her vehicle. She tried valiantly to hold onto her car keys and also onto a passenger door as her car was driven off and she was pulled to the ground. Now, this is pretty violent, and this woman, she's just driving to her home. This happened on her own doorstep. This was carried out. The gang struck again 3 days later when four males wearing masks and dark clothing, and including Mohammed Imran, set upon a man as he sat in his Volkswagen Polo through his driver's window, punching him to the head and then dragging him out of his vehicle. 4 hours later, they pounced on a woman as she sat in an Aldi car park in Acocks Green, crowded with shoppers, who was also pulled out of her Seat Ibiza and then kicked by the gang who had parked in front of her. See, this is right in front of all the people around. They just act with brazen impunity, knowing that nobody else is going to do anything. Nobody else is going to step in. Because blacks don't see why they should step in. If it's not them that is being robbed, they don't understand what the problem is to society. I mean, they say that in the book Negroes in Negroland. They don't understand that a crime against one is a crime against all. They just see it as, well, it's not me that's being robbed, so why should I be bothered about it? They do not think in the same way that white people do. And non-whites, Pakistanis, Indians, the rest of them, they're just halfway between. They're just like halfway between white people and Negroes. If you look at their DNA, that's what it will tell you as well, that they're just halfway between the two. 5 hours after that one, so that's 5 hours after pouncing on a woman in the supermarket car park in front of everybody else, 5 hours after that, at around 11 p.m, so this attack happened at 6 p.m, it happened in the afternoon, this attack, when the Aldi would have been filled with the most amount of people and nobody did anything to protect her. This gang of Muslims thought they would be perfectly fine just pulling her out of her car, kicking her to the ground and stealing it. 5 hours after that, at around 11 p.m, three men got out of a car in the city centre and attacked another man, smashing a window of his vehicle. But he managed to get away, but not before he was pursued by them. The next day, two males got into a woman's Seat Ibiza as she was waiting near Digbeth coach station, and she was also struck in the face and dragged out. A man who was on crutches, a disabled man, tried to come to the woman's help, but they then drove at him, causing him to fall to the ground and break his leg, and also drove at the woman and her partner. No regard for other people's lives whatsoever. We're just the kafir. We're just the infidel. Why should they care about us? Atif and Imran Khan were arrested on August 20th, but on October the 6th, there was another attack, this time on a 60-year-old man who had driven his BMW onto the driveway of his home in Garrett's Green. See, you're not even safe in your own home. Most people think when they're in their car and they get to their home, they're safe, but they're not. And this is after the gang had been arrested. This is 2 months after the gang had been arrested, and they're still going out carrying out these attacks. Do you think once they've been free from prison, they're not going to commit any more crimes? Why aren't these people being deported? Why aren't all these non-whites that carry out crimes, why aren't they being instantly deported? We've welcomed them into our country with open arms. We've bent over backwards to appease them and help them. In some cases, they have claimed to be refugees. And instead of thanking us for offering them refuge, they rob us, they rape us, they blow themselves up, and still we refuse to send them back to where they came from. We waste all this money on trying to rehabilitate the unrehabilitatable. Armed with a knuckle duster, a machete, and a bar, the gang smashed into the contract manager, leaving him with a shattered knee, which had to be replaced during an operation. So imagine that. You're just getting home from work. You're 60 years old and suddenly there's a gang there with a knuckle duster, a machete and an iron bar shattering your kneecap. He spent 6 days in hospital and then a period of time in a wheelchair before undergoing physiotherapy. I mean, they're just leaving people here with injuries that they will have for life. They're leaving people disabled and thinking nothing of it, just doing it on a day-by-day basis, just going out and smashing people up and stealing their car. The attackers made off in his car, which contained a computer and a phone, which was stripped of its valuable property and then later abandoned. The next day, Kabir Khan decided to hunt down a 17-year-old because of a perceived slight involving his younger brother, and against a background of rivalry between gangs in Alum Rock and Ward End. He, along with Sajid Khan and Atif Imran, drove to the Classic Fish Bar in St. Margaret Avenue, Bromford, where their intended victim was hiding inside, and where a small child was highly visible, standing near the door. Kabir Khan was brandishing a revolver, and he tried to fire it. Finally, Khan succeeded and fired the revolver straight through the glass door, making a hole about shoulder height. The bullet lodged in a plastic sign at the back. Fortunately, it missed the victim, customers, and the small child. This was sheer luck, said Mr. Curtis. If somebody was to tell me 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that a common sight in Britain would be people firing guns in fish and chip shops, wading through supermarkets with machetes, chopping people up in McDonald's and using zombie knives to try and smash through the window of a car and kill people while the school run was going on, I just wouldn't have believed it. I just would not have believed it. And the nationalists back then were all predicting it. Everything that we see now is vindication of everything that the nationalist parties of Great Britain have been warning about for the last 50 years. Why does nobody listen? It does seem at least that some people are listening now because we are having a nationalist revival. But it's not like people haven't warned that this was going to happen. And it's happened in exactly the way that nationalists said that it would. And what is the government's response? The government's response is to say, well, the judges have to go lightly on them because they may have suffered racism. What's the response in London? What is Sadiq Khan's response to knife crime? Well, he says we need to have more youth clubs. We need to have more youth clubs. We need to have more spending on the people that are carrying out these crimes, and then that will stop them. That won't stop them from carrying out crimes. The only way to clear up the crime in Britain is to segregate the people that are committing it. Segregate the non-whites. Before long, it's going to be half of all crime in the whole of Britain. If it isn't already, half of all crime is going to be carried out by non-whites. And that means that half of all crime in Britain could have been avoided, could still be avoided, if we just separated ourselves from them and segregated ourselves from them and said, we want to live with our own people. Thank you very much. We've had enough of the diversity experiment. We've had enough of multiculturalism. If you want multiculturalism, you have it in your own countries. We don't want it here. This is our homeland, not yours. While this was going on in the chip shop, Ashraf Imran had been warding off members of the public with a machete. With a machete. Again, this is becoming more and more common in Britain. Non-whites with machetes on our streets. Mr. Curtis said following the shooting, Khan fled to London, where he was later arrested, while Imran fled to Pakistan. But he was arrested on his return to the UK. And again, this is very, very common that these people will carry out these crimes and then they'll just disappear back to Pakistan. And we've got no hope of catching them. How about we just send them back to Pakistan before they carry out the crimes? Bit of a novel idea, I know, but maybe, just maybe, that might actually save us billions in resources wasted on trying to rehabilitate these people. When Kabir Khan's computer was later analysed, police found numerous pictures of guns, including one of him brandishing a tactical weapon, and also a photo he had taken of the hole that had been made by the bullet at the fish shop. Not very bright, these people. They do like to take videos of themselves committing crimes. They like to show them to people and boast about them. And of course, it then later gets used as evidence against them. And this is a very common thing among blacks and non-whites, is to record them torturing people or carrying out extreme violence against people and then sharing it among each other because they do enjoy seeing that sort of thing. And this just shows you the difference between whites and blacks. We don't want to be seeing people violently attacked. We feel sympathy for people that are being violently attacked. They look at it and they just see weakness. They just see weakness. In Africa, if there is somebody injured on the street, the other Africans aren't going to help him. The other Africans are going to rob him and beat him. I've seen it happen. I've heard them talk about it. And that's what's now happening on Britain's streets. In passing sentence, Judge Sarah Buckingham said some of the carjackings were captured on CCTV, and she went on, it makes uncomfortable viewing and illustrates graphically the violence that you are prepared to go to just to steal cars. She said it had been a vicious attack on the businessman, who had also been struck in the face with a knuckle duster. The judge said that CCTV also captured the horrific and utterly terrifying events that happened in the chip shop and that the shooting was a deliberate and reckless act. In sentencing Kabir Khan, she said, you were determined and reckless, hot with anger and revenge in mind, while she said that Ashraf Imran had been motivated by greed. Well, the one uniting factor in all of this is that they're non-white. I would say that this is a predictive factor even. When crimes happen, we can just think, well, are there any non-whites in the area? Are there any blacks in the area? They are the ones that should be checked first. Definitely blacks, because they're four times more likely than whites to be committing crimes. But of course, that's racist. But that is common sense. That is common sense. And the police aren't allowed to use common sense anymore, obviously. And as I was saying at the beginning of this, people should really check out the pictures of these five Muslims that carried out these crimes, because every single one of them just looks like a criminal, just looks dodgy. Their faces are unsymmetrical. They've got huge eyebrows, Negro lips, even though they're not Negroes. And if you have a jumbled up person that's made up of all different races, and if they're Muslim, and they're probably also come from inbreeding somewhere along the way. And this isn't said as an insult. This is just said as a fact. Most of them do indulge in cousin marriage. Then you're going to end up with people, very, very confused people, likely to be very violent and not able to control their emotions. You cannot serve two masters. And if you've got more than two races, more than one race in your genetics, you're not going to be able to know what you're doing. You're going to have instincts to be doing one thing and instincts to be doing another, and you're going to be torn apart. And the way to deal, that people deal with that is they just get anger and fury and they carry out crimes like this. I would suggest that it's entirely predictable that people that look like those pictures of these criminals would be carrying out crime. That's my instinct when I look at them, is dodgy criminals without even having read anything about them. You can look at them and think they're dodgy people that you don't want to know. What are they doing in our country? What are they doing in Britain? They're just here to take what they can from us. We should be sending them back. Well, I've got one final news story for us today, and this is a positive news story in a way. It's a small step, but it's a good step anyway. Over 2,000 clergy and laity have signed a petition calling for the Church of England to withdraw guidance on transgender welcome services, warning that celebrating sex changes could harm children. I mean, what on earth are the churches doing celebrating sex changes? As if God got it wrong when he created these people. As if the guidance in the Old Testament, where it says that anybody who is wounded in the stones cannot be a part of the congregation, as if God made a mistake when he said that. And it's perfectly fine for these people to remove their generative organs and claim to be the opposite gender. It's not okay. It also says in the Old Testament about men that wear women's clothes, and that's not allowed either. Yet the Church of England thinks it can just throw the Bible out of the window and celebrate people that are doing things that are quite clearly against God's law and that are going to be harming children, the mental harm to children, to tell them that this is okay and that gender is fluid. I mean, this sort of nonsense is dangerous enough for adults to hear about, let alone children. In response to the Mother Church of the Worldwide Anglican Communion issuing instructions in December to parishes on how they should hold celebratory ceremonies to mark a parishioner's gender swapping, conservative Christians said recognition of the theory that gender is not immutable carries potential for harm in terms of the psychological and developmental needs of children and young adults. The many ordinary parents and teachers who now express concern about these new theories do not wish to cause harm to the tiny number of children afflicted by gender dysphoria, but neither do they want to harm the potentially much larger numbers of children by prematurely imposing untried and untested ideas on young children, the open letter said. And I have to say that I do agree with all of that. Nobody wants to harm these people that are transgender. They are suffering from a delusion. They are very ill people. But we certainly shouldn't be celebrating it and telling children that it's perfectly fine and doing hormone experiments on children and encouraging them to take life-changing operations and life-changing medicine that they can't undo, that they can't repair if they decide they don't want it when they get older. This is so dangerous. What's going on? And what are these people doing claiming to be Christian? It's like, what are homosexuals doing claiming to be Christian? The Bible says that Sodom was destroyed. It was fire and brimstone. It was destroyed. It says, if a man lies with another man, that's a capital offence. It says in the New Testament that homosexuality is a punishment from God. Men were given up to unnatural lusts with other men as a punishment for not having a suitable respect for the truth. It's not something that should be celebrated. It's not something that should be celebrated. It's a punishment. It's something that should be pitied, and it's something that should be condemned. But it's certainly not something that should be celebrated. That's not Christian. What are these people doing claiming to be Christian when they've mutilated themselves and cut their generative organs off? The signatories also said that the House of Bishops Guidance for Gender Transition Services, imagine that, the House of Bishops Guidance for Gender Transition Services, lacks the serious theological analysis and raises some significant issues for the church's belief and practice. That's a very good way to put it. It lacks serious theological analysis because it goes totally against all theological instruction. That's why they aren't analysing it, because they're just going along with what society is when they should be speaking up against it. The Bible-orientated Christians added that, contrary to promises from Church of England progressives that there would be no new liturgy, which could put a transgender baptism on par with significant services like weddings and christenings, they were deeply concerned about the misuse of the liturgy due to the service's use of oil, holy water, and existing wordings of worship. These people are getting baptized for the second time, getting baptized as if they are suddenly a different gender, when all they've done is go against God's instructions and mutilated themselves. Although reaffirmation of baptismal vows might well be appropriate at certain seasons of life, it should primarily be focused on celebrating new life in Christ, rather than a new situation or circumstance, as set out in Common Worship, Christian Initiation, and should always centre on salvation, repentance and faith, rather than unconditional affirmation, they said. And you know what they're doing here, it's sin, basically. It goes against the commandments of God. It's sin. And they're being told that they should be having church services to celebrate it, celebrate their sinning. The scale of the rejection of the pro-LGBT revisions was described as unprecedented by the Reverend Ian Paul, with the member of the Archbishop's Council telling the Times, "This is the voice of the Anglican core." That's fantastic, that is. An unprecedented fight back against this. And he's saying this is the core of the Anglican Church. Maybe there is hope for the Church of England after all. And the number is likely to rise ahead of the Church's General Synod on February the 20th. A Church of England spokesman told The Telegraph, "Bishops will give the letter serious consideration, especially in the context of the preparation of a major new set of teaching and learning resources on identity, relationships, marriage and sexuality, which will be published next year." And I wonder what the teachings will be on identity. You can bet that they won't be teaching that God created the nations and he created their times and their boundaries, and that we have a duty to look out for the nation's best interests, the same as we do have a duty to look out for our own individual interests. The modern church is all about no borders and diversity and all these things that go totally against what the Bible teaches. The Bible teaches that God created the separate nations. The Bible teaches kind after kind. The Bible teaches that marriage is with bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. That means people with the same flesh as you and people with the same bones as you. That means no whites and blacks can get married. It's not a marriage. It's an unlawful marriage. It's the chasing after of strange flesh. That's what the Bible teaches. Will the Church of England be teaching it? Of course not. The Church of England already permits transgenders to marry in their places of worship. How? How can they allow the desecration of the church like that? What theological justification do they find to allow this? It's incredible. This is why nobody goes to church anymore, because there's nothing left to the modern day church. That there's no traditions. They've given them all up. They've just caved in. To the liberal progressives. They've just caved in and given up. The only authentic Christianity now is found on the internet. It's individuals, just individuals learning about these things and making the changes in their lives. There's nothing left in the establishment church. The Church of England already permits transgenders to marry in their places of worship, and at the end of last year, backed plans for the government to make it easier for a person to legally change their sex, saying excessive bureaucracy was neither welcoming nor affirming. So the authorities in the church are supporting the government with this. They're encouraging the government with its transgenderism, but the Anglican core are totally against it. Trans people with gender recognition are already able to marry in our churches. Being transgender does not prevent someone offering themselves for ordained ministry, and we have transgender clergy as well as laity. Reverend Dr. Malcolm Brown, the Church of England's Director of Mission and Public Affairs, said in October. I mean, this is just satanic. This is satanic. How can you have somebody who has mutilated themselves claiming to be clergy? They don't. Not only are they claiming to be Christian, but they're also claiming to be ordained ministers. And they're allowing them to pretend to be getting married in the churches. This is just made a mockery of the marriage service. It really shows you that the marriage service is just cosmetic. Marriage is an act. The consummation of the marriage can only take place between a man and a woman. Two men just don't have the parts of their bodies necessary for there to be a consummation of a marriage. This has all come about because what they have done is they have divorced sex from its actual purpose, which is to produce children. And they've divorced marriage from the actual marriage act into being all about the marriage service. Do you think people were swapping rings 2,000 years ago? They were writing out contracts between one another? That a lawful marriage was somebody that got married in a church? A lawful marriage was with somebody of your own race. And the idea of there being a homosexual marriage would have just been laughed off as being absolutely insane. Same as the idea of eunuchs getting married, which is what a transgender getting married is. They had eunuchs in history, but eunuchs didn't get married. All these crazy modern ideas, they're just turning the natural order on its head. They are satanic. But as I said, at least this is positive. At least this tells us that the core of the Anglican Church are against this. And that is good news. Okay, thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, we do accept donations. If you wish to donate, we do have a Bitcoin wallet. And we do have overheads to keep Radio Arian going. I will be back next week, hopefully with Max Musson, with more Arian Britannia for you. And of course, I do hope you have a great week ahead of you.
To the anti-white system on RadioArian.com.